That's such a great intro. Redline Drive. If you guys haven't heard of him, go check him out on Spotify. It really does. Like, I love Shag. He's my boy. I've known him for years, but that intro is just fire. The outro is just nice. It's subtle. It takes you into whatever you're doing for the rest of the day. But Redline Drive really hit it out of the park with that one. They made that specifically for us. They didn't, but I like to say it. Hello, howdy, and hi, and welcome to episode 112 of WADA Hockey, where we talk all things Texas hockey and the culture and stories that surround it. If you haven't, make sure to check out a few of our recent episodes where we interviewed Jack Holmes and Colby McCauley of the Allen Americans, because they just clinched a playoff spot, boys. We got playoff hockey all the way around. And as always, do us a favor and follow us on all social media platforms, all at WADA Hockey. We're excited to bring on Sean Shapiro, who has had stops with The Athletic, D Magazine, and has covered the Dallas Stars as well as the business side of the NHL. But before we bring Sean in, you know, we got to catch up with the gang. Shannon is MIA for this one. She was a little under the weather. She did hang out with us and Sean for a little while, but we just want to say, get better. Feel better, Shannon. But Patrick,
make good choices.
Make good choices. How, yes. How you been, Patty?
Doing well, man. Hit up the Denton, the UNT Sky Theater on Saturday. That was a lot of fun.
Jason's homeland.
Yeah.
Dude, I fucking love that place so much. I love it.
It was super cool. And then we walked around like downtown Denton, I guess. Went to
I mean, you were in the square, right?
Yeah, in the square. I don't know what downtown is, but we went to Beth Marie's. I went with Jason's recommendation to have the best lime sherbet ever, and it certainly was. Recommend.
I always get the two scoops, and I get like a lime sherbet and orange sherbet, like one scoop of each, and you cannot go wrong with it, dude.
Dude, I went with lime sherbet and mimosa sorbet, which are different. Yep. It was very good. Very good. Yep. Would
they
recommend.
They do like old-fashioned sodas and everything like that too there. It's a very old-school place, but I love it.
Super cool. Beautiful.
Hell yeah. That, nice like, little weekend.
It's the perfect end to like a date night in Denton.
Yeah.
Which is why that place will stay open till like well after midnight.
Dude, I mean, there was probably 50 people in line and we got there at like 8 o'clock.
Yeah. No,
that is a sign of a successful business.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
They had it down.
That sounds like a lovely weekend.
It was.
Jason, how was your weekend, man? How you been?
Dude, the weekend was cool. Got to hang out.
It was Easter.
It was great. I hung out with the family. Ate a lot of fajitas. My parents wanted fajitas for Easter. They're like, all right, deal.
Respect,
done.
Respect.
We'll do it.
Micho Akana?
Yep. You know it, dog.
My man.
The best.
And then Kelly made some elote and it was perfect.
There great. You go.
Great.
Did you have deviled eggs, though? Did they make an appearance?
Nah, dude. Not here.
That's the best part of Easter.
Yeah, I still got some in the fridge.
Get you some.
I'm all about it. Well, that's, Dude, those bags of just the pre-seasoned chicken fajitas, gotta get them. They're red. You know what else is a red bag? My Conway and Banks bag. Boom, segue.
Tell me a
little bit more about the greatest bags in all of hockey, Jason.
Well, guys, and girls, and really, you know what, everybody out there, if you're looking to replace that old moldy hockey bag with the busted zipper, go check out conwayandbanks.com. They make premium quality bags that are built to last. They include the removable organizers to keep all your gear organized, and it keeps everything dry with the waterproof materials and the giant vents. My favorite feature in there.
Yeah, there it is.
It's that built-in foot mat.
Yeah, it
keeps my feet dry in those wet locker rooms. It comes in three different sizes and five different colors now.
Five?
So you'll be sure to find one that you love. Get 10% off by using code WADAHOCKEY10. And before we get to it, I have to say, I saw the white bag in person this weekend. My buddy Jesse picked one up. It is 100% beautiful. It's so perfect. It's perfectly white and crisp with the gold lettering on it. I think the only thing that could have, yes, I think the only thing that could have made it better is if it was a gold zipper. And that's just an easy fix to a, like, I'm going to go call up a, like,
call up your boy
Taylor and say, like, dude, let's get a gold zipper on this bad boy. But I'm going to call him up. I'm going to call up Percy and say, dude, let's get a custom one, dog.
Yeah, let's do it. Maybe a water hockey one in the future.
Oh my gosh, what a black and orange.
Ooh. Well, the white one, I don't know. I'm a gold lamp red guy, but yeah, head over to conwayandbanks.com, want a hockey 10, get 10% off. Spring has sprung here in Texas, boys.
Your gear.
Oh god, I almost forgot.
In
sorry guys, today's my birthday and I'm almost I'm on the backside of 30 now, so I am forgetting things because I am to the point where things are starting to slip. Spring has sprung here in Texas, and the only way to make it even more perfect outside is with a little bit of sauce. Make sure to head over to saucetoss.com and use code WATASAUCE for 10% off your entire order. Hashtag bags for beauties. Yeah, Easter was good. Got my deviled eggs in. Had a great time. Took in I took in an Americans game on Friday. Took the fam out and laid off the media side of things. Shannon picked up the slack for me per usual at the Codex Event Center. Had a great time. My mom, she bought a Wada Hockey jersey herself, so she's got the Allen Americans red Wada Hockey jersey.
Hell,
we
matched. Yeah.
We were Twinkies. It was adorable. But yeah, Easter was a success. Today's my birthday. So when this comes out, I'll be 36 years old in 2 days. So I am tired. If you are a beer leaguer like us and love to travel, then Third Line Hockey is perfect for you. We are still pumped up to team up with Third Line Hockey as they are all about bringing like-minded individuals together for hockey-filled excursions. Places like Colorado Springs, they just had a tournament in Las Vegas. They're having one in Winston-Salem. They'll all be homes for the upcoming drafts, and they're open to all skill levels. They have one requirement, and that is to have a good time. Check out all the details on how you can get signed up at thirdlinedraft.com. That's 3RD line draft, DARUGHT.com. And make sure to follow them on Facebook as well. Join that group so you can get more updates to the minute. So with that being said, this next interview is brought to you by Third Line Draft, and it is time for the one and only Sean Shapiro. Sean, first and foremost, want to thank you for joining us today, giving us some of your time. Like we talked about a little bit before we jumped on here, you are based out of Detroit, so we kind of have to ask, Monday night's game against the Detroit Red Wings for the Dallas Stars, how did you feel that performance was, kind of setting the tone going into the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, and I know people in Dallas will love to be able to say this about St. Louis, you get a chance to play three bad teams this week in Detroit and St. Louis twice this week. So I know people in Dallas will love being able to say that about St. Louis for a little bit before you go into real games next week. Right. And it's going to be, you've got kind of this race between Dallas and Colorado for who's going to win the Central. I mean, it's essentially, it feels like it's either Minnesota or Seattle in the first round, even though there's some other math that can work out in various ways. But the thing to me that I thought, like, you look at that Detroit-Dallas game, and there was two really not even important things, but just like hanging over things that you kind of want to get out of the way in like game 80 as opposed to game 81 and 82. You really don't want to go into Joe Pavelski sitting at 999 points, right? Like, he's going to get, he's going to get 1,000. He signed for next year. It's not a big deal that he will get 1,000, but you don't want to go into game 81 and 82 thinking we have to get Joe a point. We have to do this. And you don't want to go, there's a weird awkwardness about having not gotten that done. If he went on a four game pointless streak or whatever, and you go into the playoffs. So I think there's, and then that milestone combined with Miro Heiskanen and tying Sergei Zubov for the Dallas record for points. Those are the little things where it's like, you get to kind of celebrate those big regular season goals, and then you get to kind of package them into the momentum for next week for the playoffs. And I think that's a big thing that particularly the Stars franchise has sometimes missed out on. Like, you think about the big, like, obviously the Jamie Benn winning the Art Ross. It's the last game of the regular season. Now, they sucked that year. They missed the playoffs. It wasn't like right. it was a great way to end the regular season, but it was the end and everything. And this is a way to – it was kind of a – you went and took care of business against a bad hockey team, but you celebrate Joe Pavelski's career, even though it's going to continue – for quite a while, obviously. You get to set some other things. And the other thing just about the Stars that you kind of take from that game is I know what they do against Detroit and St. Louis won't carry against into another team, but you're avoiding the problems. Like, it's almost at that weird spot where it's like you kind of like you don't want to bubble wrap things, but you want Jake Oettinger humming along smoothly. You avoided those problems. You want things to keep going where you want Thomas Harley to continue looking crisp in his game. That happened.
Mm-hmm.
Checked all the boxes, and then it was also, I mean, it's also a fun game. Like, you score that many goals, it's fun. I don't like the back-to-back against St. Louis. It's a weird scheduling at the end of the season. Like, it's something where it's like, that's the one kind of, I'm sure the NHL, when you set that schedule, you think, oh, St. Louis, Dallas, that's going to be maybe even for the Central at the end of the year. That's where it comes from. But it's I don't really like that schedule. But the Detroit game in general, a lot of really good things. You check a lot of boxes. And it's an exciting time. Like, real hot, like a week from tonight or maybe a week from last night, depending on how it goes out, you get to see real good playoff hockey. And you get moving towards that. So, long-winded answer, but
no, you're good. And ideally and home ice, because as it stands, mm-hmm. you know, we always record these on Tuesday nights, but the Jets are currently up 2-0 on the Wild. If the Jets beat the Wild tonight here on Tuesday, the Stars will in fact get home ice advantage throughout the playoffs. So that's pretty exciting. Before we jump into all of the other questions we have lined up for you, I just want to give you a chance to share some big news. I listened to the Spits and Suds podcast. Gavin Spittle is a friend of the show. But you have officially released a book about the Texas Stars and had a pretty cool drop from one of the Texas Stars as of right now, giving you guys the forward. So can you kind of tell us a little bit more about the book, where we can find it, and kind of the inspiration behind it and what went into that?
Yeah, so it's the name of the book is called We Win Here. It's the definitive essays you need about the Texas Stars. And kind of the idea for the book, where it came from, was Stephen Meserve, who is the brain behind 100 Degree Hockey. I don't know how many people actually know it's Stephen Meserve. He's always been done his branding as 100 Degree Hockey, and he's done a great job as that. But Stephen and I, for years, have over beers talked about the AHL, talked about the Texas Stars, and so many times a conversation would end probably over ordering another beer of like, hey, we should write this down someday. And and course,
how do you think this podcast started?
yes and the way so many creative great creative things start. And basically we kind of came to a couple months back, we were like, well, we've had these ideas, like, why don't we just write it down? And we kind of looked in, and I've had a book published before, I worked through a publisher before, but we're like, okay, let's look into this. How can we go through the self-publishing route? And we did that. And it was, we ended up about 150 word book on the Texas Stars. We got Curtis McKenzie to write the foreword for us. He, actually that people should read the book for the book, but I've told so many people this, that like, Curtis McKenzie wrote the most impressive athlete forward I've ever seen, because so many times, and I dealt with this with my other book, and I've talked to other people who have done books, it becomes the forward from a player becomes very player tribune-esque, where the player tells something to the player tells somebody else to do it, and that's really what happens. This was legitimately Curtis McKenzie working in the Google Doc. Like, we could actually see it as he's like typing and changing like his mind and everything like that, and writing a really well thought out piece about why the Texas Stars have meant so much to him and his family. Why he essentially gave up is the wrong word, but he turned down NHL contract opportunities to sign with Texas at this stage in his career. And it's so obviously, read the foreword by Curtis McKenzie. And then the book is, we're incredibly proud of how it came out. It tackles a lot of some of the fun, nerdy minor league hockey things that, frankly, I don't know what other outlets would ever give us the space to dive into that space, between going into some of the history the Texas Stars franchise to looking back at, I mean, with some of the stuff that impacts Dallas today, where as mm-hmm. much as we look back at the Jack Campbell failure within Dallas, so much of a lot of the lessons taken from that really paved the way for the franchise to be ready to help put Jake Oettinger on the spots he's on today. It was kind of one of those passion projects where we joked the entire time, if we only sold one book, we'd be thrilled because we knew we'd sell one book because we'd be able to get, we'd be able to get Steven's mom to buy it. But drop Monday. We actually got more than just Steven's mom to buy the book. So it's a success.
There we go.
And it's all downhill from here.
I'm surprised we have more than like 5 listeners outside of our parents ourselves. So.
Yeah. My mom doesn't even listen to this.
My mom doesn't listen. Come on, mom. This. Okay, so shifting over a little bit to the Dallas Stars side. You know, at times Jim Neal has received criticism for some of his moves or lack thereof at the trade deadline, but he's not so secretly built a very impressive minor league system. Do you see Neal receiving any attention for GM of the Year?
So the GM of the Year award is weirdly voted upon. It's one of the awards that we don't... So many awards in the NHL are regular season awards. And it's the votes for... I know PHAWA members who will be voting for NHL awards are probably getting their ballots. Some those ballots kind of came in this week, I believe, and those ballots have to be in by Monday. But the GM of the Year award is voted on by the GMs themselves, and it's voted on after the second round of the playoffs. So it every year you'll notice three. It basically becomes a not as much of who the finalist will be. It just becomes who is the one GM who the other GMs thought did the least amount of work of the four conference finalists. So like, for example, so like Sakic went, like Joe Sakic won GM of the Year last year, and it's nothing to say that Joe Sakic didn't earn GM of the Year, but I believe the other three finalists were if you went go back and check, like historically, it's always like Jim Neal was a GM of the Year finalist in 2020 when the Stars were in the bubble, and so it's always going to be. Now if you were to take, if you were properly to define that award and you were to go to base it off the regular season and to base it off the regular season, how things go, obviously Jim's done a great job in building this team to where they are. They made a coaching change. It is really hard not to look at a team in Boston that is that far ahead of everyone. Obviously, yeah, right. Basically Boston's only misstep is signing a prospect they really shouldn't have signed in that whole Mitchell Miller situation. But everything from a hockey perspective, Don Sweeney has done, for all his past history and whatever you want to say about his past history, it's hard not to look at what they've done this year, because that team has already had a bunch of those pieces, but you added more, you went and got at the deadline. Now, if you're Western Conference, I mean, Jim actually was a big buyer by Western Conference standards. Like, the East was this massive arms race and everything like that. Right. But the West was, by adding Domi, by adding Dadonov, there's not many teams who did more in the West than the Stars. So it's kind of using the sliding scale of expectation in your competition. Like, Jim did a really nice job and all of that. And the Stars are a cup contender. Like, you can't not say that about the Stars. You look at that and... They actually probably have, if you were to give the Stars versus any Eastern Conference team other than Boston, you would almost feel the Stars would have a better chance just because they're in the West, where you won't have to beat anyone that comes out of the East. Going to have to beat Boston. They're going to have to beat Carolina or New Jersey. It's just going to be a bloodbath. And it's the right year to be in the West. Mm-hmm. And it's the Stars have that advantage, and they are one of the best teams in the West.
Yeah, agreed.
I think we kind of all knew the answer as far as the who was going to win the awards. Boston is pretty much going to run it. Now, I will say, too, before Pat comes in with his question, while we're talking about it, Jamie Benn was, what is it, the Masterton Award? Masterson.
Masterton Award, yeah.
Masterton.
Yeah.
Not a lot of S's, but yeah, so most improved player, and I think that kind of goes without saying. It's definitely shown this season, and it's kind of contributed to the success of this team this year?
Yeah, Jamie. I mean, it's Jamie Will Masterton's also another weird award. Like the NHL has a lot of weird awards. That's a whole other. That's a
you
whole
mean
other.
To tell me the NHL doesn't know what they're doing half the time. That's insane, John.
Yeah.
I don't
believe that for a second. Well, it's the NHL has the NHL doesn't have a comeback player of the year award. Has the Masterton and its quote unquote dedication to hockey and. Mm-hmm. It's an award where basically every team has a nominee, and it always ends up coming down to the list of like guys end up fitting one of three categories. It becomes guy who had career altering injury or illness. It's and came back to keep playing. Why I might feel terrible because I can't remember his name, but the guy from Philly who he had lymphoma and then came back and played a couple of years back.
I'm with you. I can't remember his name.
Or the year that Steven Johns and Bobby Ryan were also the finalists, and Bobby Ryan obviously came back from he had entered the player assistance program and everything like that. So you get someone who comes back from a career / life altering off ice thing. Then you get then you get the 4A guy who still keeps going. That's the 1 year in Dallas where we had Taylor Fadun as the nominee for the Masterton. And just because from the level of, you talk about definition of dedication to hockey, guy who was traded for a 7th round pick from Buffalo for literally condition was he had to play an NHL game for the pick to mean anything. Otherwise he literally would have been traded for nothing. And so you have the guys who are the minor leaguer who stuck around in the NHL. And then you have the old guy who's just kept going. And that's where Jamie kind of falls under. And those guys never win the award. It's nice to give them a nice recognition. Case in point, last year, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, but his Patrick Marleau is the nominee out of San Jose, and Patrick Marleau didn't actually win it. And it's kind of one of those things where it's like the guy who literally sets the career games played record in the NHL. I mean, if you're talking about dedication to hockey, that's actually the definition of the award. It's the one time we've actually had someone who actually fit the definition of the award, and they didn't win it. So NHL awards are weird because it's every time anyone wants to talk about a snub or whatever, there's always these caveats where it's like for example, the Vezina Trophy is the Vezina is not voted on by writers. The Vezina is voted on by the 32 GMs, and it's an anonymous ballot. And GMs use win-loss as basically that. Like, we know Linus Olmark is going to win the Vezina. I'm not saying that he shouldn't win the Vezina, but he's going to win the Vezina because of his win-loss record and his goals against average. That's why he's going to win the Vezina. It's writers, and I'm not saying writers get it right, but it's the fact of the matter is sometimes people will say, oh, the Vezina finalists are wrong, and that's GM's making that decision, where other awards are voted on by the writers, and then the Jack Adams is the coach of the year award is voted on by the broadcasters, and it's a space where all of the awards are like they come with all their weird caveats, and it's like, and the other thing about it too is like, why do we have and I'm not saying we should take away this trophy, but why do we have a Selkie, but we don't have an award? Why do we have an award for the best defensive forward, but not an award for the best offensive defenseman? Because if you want to use the Norris, for example, the Norris is the most defenseman, most excellent at their position, or whatever the official terminology is, or whatever. Like, okay, Erik Karlsson should win an award for the best offensive defenseman, but are you really going to consider him the best defenseman in the NHL? And you can have that debate, but there's still, why do we create the caveat in the position for forwards but not defensemen? There should be the Bobby Orr award or something like that. Something where you give the best offensive defenseman and then we can move things around. It's NHL awards are weird, man. It's just true.
It is a weird, weird league.
It sounds like we need to go down this rabbit hole soon, though. Like, this may need to be its own episode. Like in the off season, what are you doing in the off season, man? Like you want to hang out? Like, lots of beers. Let's talk about this.
Yeah. It is the NHL awards when you have you get the ballot and you get basically you rank things 1 through 5 and it's and it's and it becomes such a and that's where it starts to become oddly regional. Like it is, it's a wormhole. Like,
just wait until astrology's on the ballot.
Yeah,
like Jake Ottinger's an Aries. I don't know. I don't know if he
it's
is. Leo
season right now too. And yeah. Like, shall we take that into consideration?
Yeah.
Keeping it kind of Jim Neal topical, he was able to bring Robo back for a very team friendly price, especially given the results that Robo's shown this year. You spoke on the Spits and Suds podcast on how fans will look back on the season, everything Robertson's done. That's all great. But outside of his performance, what's impressed you the most on this season's Stars teams, as there's been multiple records broken, multiple milestones, all that?
Yeah, it's weird to say about a guy who is has such the profile as. Hold on one second.
You're good.
Love it.
Someone's supposed to be in bed.
It's the best. I love when that happens.
Yeah, it's just
hey, Shannon had to go right now too.
Yeah.
Shannon's kid was on the podcast. What was it? 2 weeks ago. So
yeah, yeah, he was apparently up and just
So yeah. So anywho, that was my daughter. She came into. She's supposed to be asleep right now, but she came in to check in on things. So and anywho,
are you still talking about hockey, Dad?
She had she was at the rink. I mean, she's 4 years old, and she was we were at the rink today. She does skating lessons on Tuesday, so she's at least starting to enjoy a little bit of herself, so that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But so anywho, what was so I was going down this route. Miro Heiskanen, as much as it's the fact when the one lacking thing if you could say anything about Heiskanen, is there was the QB1 power play quarterback, best player in the league category for that. Like, there's a difference between being a, like, John Klingberg is an elite power play quarterback, and he's in that top 1% of running the power play. But that's where his game is, where Miro, his game, his overall game is just dominant. And you have a lot of guys in Miro's category who are very good at running the power play, but that's not the reason they're making the money they are. It's the, the Roman Yossis of the world, the Roman Yossis of the world, the Victor Hedmans of the world, great, great defensemen, but their running power play ability, for lack of a better word, way to phrase it, is more just an accessory and part of the whole package and not a dominant strength. And we saw Heiskanen with Klingberg's departure really take the step to we can start to have that discussion of is Miro a top 5, top 10 power play quarterback in the league? Not I would debate anyone. He's a top 5 defenseman in the league, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's added that element where he's a top 5. Is he a top 5 quarterback on the power play in the league? He ties Zubov's record for points by a defenseman in Dallas this year. The fact that he took that jump to me is the thing where that's the mark where Miro can now win a Norris Trophy, because part of the Norris Trophy, as I kind of mentioned before, and you have to have the points, and he's now getting those points, having a 71 point season that sets the baseline for next season. And that sets the part where he now can potentially win a Norris Trophy. Just so to see him take that jump and to see that there is ability for him to take that jump, that to me is the most impressive, probably most important thing this season, because that impacts today, that impacts the playoffs, that impacts long term. And then the other thing is, like, I mean, honestly, like, how can you not talk about what Joe Pavelski continues to do at 38 years old? Like, how, like, just the way he's completely defied the aging curve. Like, this is not supposed to, and I know his game is, he was never fast in the first place, so his game was never one where he was gonna, with age, but to continue to put up this type of point total to, at 38, to go, to kind of, not reinvent's the wrong word, but like, we now have, like, if Joe Pavelski plays till he's 43, like, it's not going to surprise you, right? Like, you almost, like it almost becomes a space where, like, you wonder what, like, it's going to be more surprising when he actually retires. Like, it used to be like, oh, at some point age is going to get him. And now you're like, I don't know if it's going to happen. And the fact that Joe Pavelski continues to do that to me is, and it's fitting, obviously, is the 1,000 points last night. Right. It's his 1,000th career point last night on a tip play, of course, of all things. Like,
beautiful.
It's
best way to do it.
Yeah. It's he's really like when he signed with the Stars, it really felt like it would be like Joe at the end of his career, Joe Pavelski, San Jose Shark. And oh, by the way, he spent a couple of years wearing a Dallas jersey and it probably felt a little weird. Like, he's almost added a chapter where someone's going to look back at Joe Pavelski's career and it's going to be Joe Pavelski, Dallas Star, and San Jose Shark. Like, I don't think anyone would have expected that when he first signed with the Stars.
No, I think we're all excited. And it was on one season
record and say that.
Yeah. And what's in the water in San Jose? You've got Marlowe, who played most games all time. You've got Pavelski, who's got, you know, 1,000 career points at 38 years old, had the highest scoring point season, I think last season it was, in his entire career. And then you got Brett Burns now over in Carolina. These guys are just defying the odds. And maybe it's just the purest water in North America. I don't know. It's a San Jose thing.
I do think there is something to being able to, like, and it's something where, like, I know people always like rip on Sunbelt hockey or whatever, but there is something to, like, Joe Pavelski's entire career, his entire life playing in San Jose, and he, when he was going somewhere else, he only considered Dallas and Tampa, and it's partially for the hockey teams, but it also was because Dallas and Tampa, A, have no state income tax, and B, and B, you can play golf all year round. And I mean, Joe Pavelski is pretty close to a scratch golfer, and golfs all year round, and that's his lifestyle. Like, I think there's something to that lifestyle of when you get to play hockey and then you get to walk out of the rink in shorts and you get to play golf on off days. Like, I don't know. There's definitely something. I don't know if there's a scientific thing to that, but there's something to that about career.
I'm sure there's
career longevity.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
And not to mention, I don't remember the exact date, but he's played the most consecutive games without missing of anybody on the Stars, if I remember correctly. And his plus minus is higher than his age, which is also insane.
I mean, it's unreal. It really is. I think you brought it up. Yeah.
He's about to be the Cal Ripken Jr. of the league.
Yeah, it's insane.
I like that analogy, Jason. Way to bring it to baseball. And you got the black and orange water hockey shirt on. You just
you
Orioles
had to do it.
Mentality.
Had to do it. Well, kind of bringing it to the Stars organization here. I mean, we've got the ECHL team, the AHL, the NHL heading into their playoffs just coming up. What does that kind of say for the future of the franchise overall and kind of how we're set up for the next 5 years?
Yeah, it's with you look at those Stars and they are built right now to win now, right? But there is the prospect pool is set up extremely well. You have the Wyatt Johnston's addition to the team this year, who at 19 is, I mean, they didn't expect him to play every NHL game this season. They expected him to play in the NHL this year, but they expected more of the kind of like Shane Wright route where comes up, probably would go back to Team Canada for World Junior, might need an AHL conditioning stint. They never expected Wyatt Johnston to be a 20-goal scorer. And you have him already in the NHL. And then you have Logan Stankoven, who looks like a complete second-round steal out of Kamloops. And other than, if not for Bedard, probably would be the WHL Player of the Year.
Absolutely.
And you also have the... like Maverick Bork kind of gets forgotten in all of that just because he's in the AHL right now. Maverick Bork, I think, is a really bright future. And then the other one that just kind of like, and now Thomas Harley's easy to remember because he just got called up. But then you have not even in North America, you have Leon Bixel playing over in Switzerland, the first round pick from a year ago, who is also, and it's the great thing when you have that many prospects, when you have that many guys who you're like, okay, this guy can be part of that long-term core or this, whatever. When you only have one or two, the pressure internally and externally gets ramped up so much on that guy has to be this. That guy has to do that. They have to hit this level. And if they don't, the entire thing has failed. And when you have four or five guys, Harley can take a couple years to progress.
Yep.
Stankoven, Maverick Bork can struggle at the start of the season in the AHL without it being a state of crisis. Bixel can play in Europe for a couple years. When you have the collective, it becomes the pressure gets lower on everyone, and it allows you to build properly. And the thing that the Stars have also done a really good job of, and it's, I'll pivot this back to, obviously I wrote an entire book about this, is with one of the things they've done with the Texas Stars is they've focused on building a mentality in the AHL where they win through development. And I know someone who doesn't pay attention to minor league hockey is going to think that sounds silly, but it actually is a conscious choice. There's some teams who actually focus on winning with their minor league affiliate, and there are some teams that focus on just having ex prospect play. The Stars have always focused on bringing in, right now it's the Curtis McKenzies of the world. It used to be the Travis Morins and Max Fortunases who were there too. So your prospects are playing important playoff games in the minor leagues, and they're the ones that carry the boat. Like Maverick Bork's a great example. This past weekend, he scores 5 goals and he's the
right
AHL player of the week. Maverick Bork struggled at the start of the year, but Maverick Bork was allowed to struggle at the start of the year because guys like Curtis McKenzie are carrying the lineup at the start of the year and allows your prospects to understand and grow. And all of a sudden him struggling at the start of the year isn't bringing an entire team down. So the Stars have always focused on building a winning team in Texas. I love that mentality about teams. There was the big news last week, right, where the Chicago Wolves have decided they're parting ways with the Carolina Hurricanes. And part of the breakup in that is the Hurricanes, even though they actually had prospect pool that was good enough to win the Calder Cup, ironically enough, in Charlotte in 2019, and then in Chicago and last year, the year prior, Carolina didn't really care about winning games in the AHL. They lucked out. They had the prospect that was good enough. And so the Chicago Wolves pretty much split with them because they're like, we want to be partnered with a team that wins through development. Mm-hmm. And you have those 4 to 5 prospects that you can build around long term. And then the Stars have created a space with the Texas Stars where you have that expansive net that allows you to add those other pieces, that allows the Frederick Olofssons to develop into a reliable bottom six player, that allows some other guys from the past who have gone from kind of no names in a prospect pool to playing NHL games because they developed in that system. And it's, the Stars are set up very well long-term for this. And and then you just add kind of the cherry on top of it with everything where they have the setup where it's not, the location's great too. And I think that's something that sometimes gets lost where, I think there's a real power in having your AHL team close enough where your Dallas Brass can go watch a game. Like Texas is playing tonight, right? Like I'm sure Dallas Brass literally drove down I-35 to go watch the game tonight. There's power to that. And then there's also power to having it close enough where an injury happens on a Tuesday morning, you can call a guy up and he can be there in a couple hours. But it also creates a space where there is something to work towards. There is something for the player in Austin to work towards Dallas. And I think that fit works really well. Where on the flip side, you're in San Jose, the Barracuda are in San Jose, and I know they love to shuffle prospects back and forth. You're not working to move anywhere. You're living in San Jose the entire time. And I think maybe I'm a little old school on the thinking on this, but I do think there's a value in having something to work towards to actually be called up somewhere too. So
yeah, and makes a lot of this sense. Is kind of a side question on that.
Yeah.
because the ECHL, you know, we're very familiar as a podcast with the Allen Americans, kind of like we talked about a bit. Yep. And, you know, we're very familiar with the league and, you know, the shuffling between the AHL and ECHL. But the Idaho Steelheads, the ECHL affiliate of the Dallas Stars, recently set a record for, I believe it was most wins in a season by an ECHL franchise. When you look at something like that, how impressive is that? Because obviously a lot of those guys, and this is with all due respect, will not see the NHL. They will max out at the AHL on loans, 5 to 10 games maybe. But ECHL is really where they're going to stay. So kind of what would you say from your standpoint, how is that kind of looked upon in the Stars organization? Obviously, winning is great.
Yeah.
But
The ECHL, I mean, I want to like frame this properly, because like early in my – I remember like 5 or 6 years ago, I once wrote a story about a goalie playing in the ECHL, and people got angry because they felt I was ripping on the ECHL. But at the end of the day, if you're a skater in the ECHL, very rarely will you actually play in the NHL. It's just right. The numbers of it, very rarely. But now goaltending is different. There's only so many jobs, and you need minutes. And right. You have teams like, for example, up here in Detroit, the Red Wings decided to send their first round pick, Sebastian Cosa, to Toledo because it made more sense for him to play every minute. Like Jonathan Quick played in the ECHL. So the ECHL.
Rémi Poirier this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Made it from the ECHL all the way to the NHL.
So the ECHL from a development league is more of, you do have some goalie development to the NHL, but it's more of ECHL players are trying to develop into AHL players. And that's kind of where, and those guys are trying to find the space where, are you going to be a North American guy? Are you going to go to Europe someday? It's a very interesting dichotomy of everything. The thing that's most impressive about ECHL success, though, is by the nature of the ECHL rules, I'm sure you won't know this with your Allen dealings, is the fact of the matter is, you can only sign 1-year deals. You can't sign you can't be like, oh, we're going to sign this guy for, like, even if a guy sticks around for a long time, it's just a continuous flux. It's a continuous rollover of, oh, we signed you another 1-year deal, another 1-year deal. That's all you can do in the ECHL. So to build a core that rolls over from season to season is to have a coach. It comes down to the coach and the GM, who are basically the same guy in the ECHL. It comes down to having someone who can pretty much handle that recruiting. And if you're not good at that, you start seeing there's some ECHL teams where you can see you get stuck in a really bad cycle where it's hard to get out, because once it kind of becomes this reputation where you're not bringing in winning players, you're not winning games, it's hard to do it. Like the ECHL is also a league that, I think people kind of forget about some of the other oddities of it, where there's the level of the 13th rate. It's still did they move it up to 14 forwards now? Like, or did they add a roster spot this year? Because there was a while it was only a 19. Doing math in my head right now. You had a 16-skater roster, right? So you didn't have full. You don't have four full lines like an AHL or NHL team, right? Like it's basically, you kind of had this spot where a lot of the times the ECHL becomes survival. It's the Friday night game, the Saturday night game, but then you get the 3-3 in those leagues, and you've been playing 10 forwards, and you're playing after a long bus trip, and the league becomes bit of survival, and it can be chaotically fun at times, but it's also the reason where it's not a league that's really set up to develop players, skaters, and it's a sad truth of it. And like, I know someone from the ECHL will be unhappy with me saying that, but from a skater perspective, unless you're doing what Toronto's doing, where they're just pumping money into the Newfoundland Growlers, you're not putting anyone in there that you think is going to be a long-term NHL or even AHL option. It's more so of you win games model, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, it's the reality of it. And it's one of the reasons that the Stars have stayed affiliated with Idaho is the Steelheads have been a very well-run organization up until COVID canceled the playoffs, and then they didn't take part, and then they were one of the teams that opted out of, because remember a couple teams opted out of the ECHL.
Right.
When that happened, like, they had made the playoffs in 25 straight years, and so there's a loyalty perspective between Dallas and Idaho that fits well, where they like that it works, where they can send their second tier goalie prospect there and everything, and the Stars like how things are run in Idaho, and that's the reason they're not leaving it, because at the end of the day, you can carry more. The thing that the AHL has to the NHL that the ECHL doesn't have the AHLs, there's no roster limit in the AHL, right? So in the AHL, you can be carrying 30, like the Texas Stars, look at their roster right now. There's like 30 guys on the roster. So it's not like you need, it's not like there's going to be an injury and, oh, we got to get a guy from Idaho right away. There's not that rush like there is in the NHL. And for that reason, that's one of the reasons that Dallas and Idaho will probably be affiliated as long as humanly possible, because of that loyalty and the fact that while getting someone from Boise to Austin isn't the easiest thing in the world, it's also not a requirement to be able to field a roster in Cedar Park that night. So,
right.
To answer your question on the roster size, the active roster maximum is 20 players, and you can dress 18 per game, two of which have to be goaltenders.
Okay, so they're up to 16 now, so they can.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, so it's still you're still at the spot in that league where it's then basically you got 10 forwards, so it's the,
yeah.
How do you, which that's another interesting thing as a coach, is how do you use that 10th forward spot? I know, like, I've talked to coaches who've coached in the ECHL before, where for some, and it's changed a little bit. It used to be almost like that 10th forward used to be basically, for some teams though, it used to be that 10th forward used to be the pugilist, right? Like, that's what it used to be, where it's like, okay, like we have the guy who's going to play, he's going to play 7 minutes tonight, but he's also going to spend 10 minutes in the box. Like,
yep.
And it's so for some other teams, it's become, it's kind of evolved more and more to, how do you utilize that as maybe you have a guy who's the power play specialist, the penalty coach, it's an interesting math to play for an ECHL coach that other coaches, obviously AHL and above, and even junior hockey, you've got a full four line stable and maybe even more in some leagues. So,
you actually kind of answered our next question around prospects, but I had one follow up that I had prepared ahead of time.
Okay.
And you named him specifically, and that's Thomas Harley. You know, this is his second stint in the NHL. First one was lackluster, you could say. Not much production, not much time on ice, but in 30 fewer games, he has half as many points already. And the milestones, his first point on Monday. What has been your impression so far of his four games so far?
He's been really good. I mean, he's been really good. He's looked like an NHL player. That's one of the one of the things that you just kind of pops when you watch him play. You watch the confidence. You watch how he skates. There's the little things that you probably didn't see before with him. And with Harley, it's one of the weird things about Harley's development that I think sometimes gets lost in the nuance of it all is he had a very weird development path time-wise, where gets drafted, he kind of starts entering the pro system in the middle of all the COVID stuff. There's the taxi squad. So there's not really, when the taxi squad's there, you then kind of have to make the decision between, all right, like, there wasn't a true call up send down reality. Like, basically the taxi squad was kind of the cut line. Like, you're either on the taxi squad or you're in the AHL, and they did that. And so, like, he kind of had a very and lots of prospects did in this time. So, but it's not like Thomas Harley had it more difficult than any prospect you name for the Nashville Predators or whatever, but it is an important, I think, context when we look at the long-term prognosis for Harley of he kind of dealt with this weird up and downness and of that wasn't normal. And now I think the past 2 years, things were able to normalize for Harley. He was able to this year, sending him to Texas, I believe, was the right decision. He needed to play. He was playing something like 23, 24 minutes a night for the Texas Stars. He rebuilt some of the confidence that he kind of frankly had lost. And he has, it's the thing that about Thomas Harley is, and it's, you can say this about a lot of NHL players, is they have he has a healthy ego, and he needed the air to blow up the balloon even more of that healthy ego. And we're seeing him play with that. He will be one of the Dallas Stars sixth defenseman for the playoffs, barring an injury. And that's kind of what you hoped would happen. Now there's all these other caveats you can talk about of who's not playing because of that, or who's in the lineup. There's lots of other spider effects on that, but Thomas Harley right. in a vacuum, but things worked well for Thomas Harley in a vacuum. I will say it that way.
Yes, absolutely. He's improved immensely defensively. He's done exactly what he needed to do. So yeah, cool. I completely agree. That's where he needed to be. I also want to it's not going to be an update whenever we release this on Thursday. But the Texas Stars, that is, Maverick scored another goal. So he continues his hot streak into the week.
Another one.
Yeah. So 3-3 against the Moose. So
the Meese?
The Mises, the Meese. Yeah.
he's Bork's going to be good. He's someone who's going to be, the thing I'm interested to see about what Bork does is what happens when he plays with better players. Because he seems to me kind of like that classic example of a player who, when he's playing with he's playing with more talented players, his game will excel. Like, cause I remember watching a while back, watching John Klingberg in the AHL, and you watch Klingberg and he was good in the AHL, but then he went to the NHL and his game took another level because other offensive players were reading off of him that AHL players maybe weren't. And so I'm really, really interested to see Bork next year, hopefully kind of at least in training camp at the start of the season, to see what happens when he's playing with other NHL level skill, because I think there's only so much his game can do as a playmaker. And it's great to see him putting the puck in the net. Like, to see he's scoring goals right now, but for him, the NHL prognosis is he's going to create for others. And if he can create, and when he starts playing with better players, I'm going to be really interested to see what he does, because I think he could be a really good, long-term second line center that you're second line forward, where you're this is the guy that allows us to be a two-pronged attack behind, because obviously at some point someone else is going to have to take Joe Pavelski's spot. At some point somebody else will play with Robertson and Hintz, right?
Right.
But at the same time, you need somebody else to. Tyler Seguin and you need you're going to have to find that middle center to be the number to lead that second charge. And I think Bork really could be that guy. So
time will tell. That's for sure.
It's a lot to look forward to.
Right. Well, kind of shifting more to a league-wide question. The NHL is notably struggling to a degree when compared to other main leagues in North America, like the NBA, MLB, and NFL there. In your opinion, what are some of the small changes that can be done, maybe better promote or better equip fans to see their teams play and become more accessible?
The NHL's
marketing. I could tell that was a very deep breath you had to take there.
Yes. So the NHL is definitely the fourth largest North American pro sports league. But I think we sometimes forget that there's the other landscape of it too, where it's like, you hate to say it, but college football's, not the hate to say it, but it's just true. College football is college football is bigger than it's college bigger. Football's. It's also bigger than baseball and the NBA, honestly. The two biggest sports in America are football and football. It's the NFL and college football. Just if you really want to come down to it, the NHL is still very much a it's getting better, but it's still very much it's still a regional league, and it's still a league where I don't think, like, I think in the NBA you have people who are NBA fans who will watch the final even if their team is not included. And I think the NHL, even though you do have some people like it's great, like I watch a ton of hockey, but I think the average hockey fan really is more of the regional hockey fan, is more of the I'm a Buffalo Sabres fan, I'm a Dallas Stars fan, I'm a Nashville Predators fan, whatever. Like, the average hockey fan is more of the fan who watches their team until it's out. And it's why the first round of the playoffs is great. We have 16 teams going, there's all these games going, it's easy to flip over, but as your team loses, like, all right, well, am I still gonna watch? Like, that's not my view on it, but I think that's a little bit more of the average hockey fan. And so yeah. I think there's something where the NHL is fighting that. The other thing about the NHL that just is the North American sports fan is it needs the superstar personality. It's just the reality of it. It's the NFL, as much as anybody wants to talk about how important the offensive line is or whatever, at the end of the day, what sells? It's quarterbacks. It's quarterbacks who sell the game.
Right.
And in the NBA, it's the superstars who sell the game. And baseball has the problem, same problem hockey has too, where their stars don't market themselves. Like, right. Like it's the NHL has a problem. And it's kind of one of these chicken or the egg things where it's Sidney Crosby doesn't care about growing, doesn't really care about the brand that is Sidney Crosby. He cares about winning a hockey game, and he's very into the ethos of team first, and he's great. And if you love hockey and you watch it, it's awesome. But at the end of the day, he's not going out of his way to promote the game beyond maybe some local Pittsburgh ads and some Tim Hortons commercials. Like, it's right. it's just, that's the reality of it. And so for the NHL, they need to fight this level, and they need Austin Matthews to become the norm. They need Austin. They need a guy who's willing to have a little bit of flair, a guy who isn't afraid to say he's friends with Justin Bieber. Like, you need more of that. And it's kind of one of those things where hockey marketing needs to be better, not disputing that at all. But you also need a player cultural change. And that's still a long, slow trickle. And I feel like you could say the same thing about baseball because, like, I mean, Mike Trout has the personality of a trout. That was way too easy. Apologies.
Yeah. I was going to say, you've got Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid is like waking up from a nap during an interview.
Oh, yeah. And they don't care. And like, players don't care as much about marketing the game. And I think it also goes up to the top part where Gary Bettman and Adam Silver are two very different commissioners. And I think it's like, you look at the growth and explosion of the NBA compared to the growth and explosion of the NHL. Adam Silver's job, they both have the same job description, actually, to grow their individual league. Adam Silver looks at his job as to grow basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Bettman looks at his job to take care of the NHL. I don't think Adam Silver cares about how do we make basketball more accessible to younger kids? They started the NBA Africa League. How do we grow the game globally? The NHL has always been the very short term dollar cents. This is the best decision. And maybe it even, but at least in our mind, this is the best decision right now. And the way Gary has done his business hasn't been about growing the game. If Gary Bettman really cared about growing the game of hockey, there would be something like the WNBA where the NHL would have basically taken the NBA subsidizes the WNBA, and the NHL would have done something like that where, like, I mean, obviously, as you saw earlier, I was interrupted by my 4-year-old daughter. Like, right now, like, she's a kid who I take her to go skate, I take her to the rink, and I tell her, like, oh, we want to watch good women's hockey. There's really no option. Like, if you talk about growing the game, and the NHL really cared about that, they would do it. And that's the issue. The NHL cares about the NHL's best interest for right now, and not necessarily growing hockey every single day. And I think, and that's not going to change as long as it's not going to change as long as Gary Bettman's in charge. It's also not going to change if Bill Daly becomes the next commissioner, because him and Gary are linked at the hip. It's a space where the NHL also struggles, where I think they celebrate their wins too much and don't realize why the win happened, or like one of the most ridiculous things. So I think it was an Emmy, but the NHL digital dasherboards are nominated for like a sports Emmy. And so
that's hitting me.
There's like, that's going to be used as a success for NHL digital dasherboards. And so that will be the success point instead of the hard dissection and breaking down of why parts of it worked and why parts of it didn't. It will just be, oh, that worked. And that's, I think the NHL celebrates its wins way too much. Like, I mean, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing in the hockey sense where this past weekend, right? 16 NHL games on Saturday. Fine. Fun marketing shtick, whatever. Why was there no games Friday night? Like it's Friday night. And on top of that, ESPN, you're working with ESPN, who's the carrier for the Frozen Four. The Frozen Four games are on Thursday and Saturday. So like the Quinnipiac Minnesota game, actually a really good hockey game, played at the exact same time as 16 other NHL games. It's like, from a hockey perspective, like there's no way the NBA is playing 16 games on the same day as the Final Four. That's just not happening.
No,
and there's just a space where hockey as a collective is. You have the NHL who cares about its interests, and then you have, because it comes from the top, they aren't willing to really lead the rest of the sport that way. It's a whole. There's a lot that has to change, and as you can see, there's not really a simple answer, and hence my heavy sigh at the question. Not at the question itself, but at the answer that I was taking a deep breath for. So
no, I completely get it, and it's funny because the two follow-up questions I had were literally, part of it was virtual boards, and the rest, you know, marketing. How can you be successful? It's really a shame because there are two prominent women's hockey leagues that are kind of at ends with each other right now for you know, their own personal beliefs and systematic ways. The NHL could easily go scoop them up, and they bring in, you know, girls like Sarah Nurse and Hillary Knight. Let's bring them, you know, Kendall Coyne, bring them into the All-Star competition. But once the All-Star competition's over, all right, go back to your leagues where you have to stream it on ESPN8, the Ocho. And it's some guy with a camcorder on a scissor lift, much like I had to do like for an NA3 team. It's like, you know, you're not giving these people, you know, the women, the proper, really the respect they deserve. Because my personal opinion is, if you look at the NBA and the WNBA, the on-court product is legitimately night and day. The athletic skill, and this is not taking away anything, because all of those women in the WNBA make way more than I do at work. What they do on the court cannot really translate over to the NBA. But you look at the women's hockey at the top level, they can play, and they can play really, really fast and very well. It's just really a shame. I could honestly go on for the next hour and a half of just trashing Gary Bettman and saying that he needs to go away. But the fact that you say, what is it, Bill Daly could come in and basically be the same thing, scares me to death. Because there needs to be a systematic change in the NHL marketing-wise.
I don't want to fault like anybody in particular, but I think some of the problem is like access to it, but operational costs in the South are completely different to what like access to like in the Northeast is, where they have more year round colder temperatures and like up in the North and everything up in Canada.
So can't play outside here.
Exactly. And so we might see where pro beach hockey is great because it's cool for people in the South, where we have access to roller rinks, you know, 365 basically, but switching to ice, I mean, there's only a handful of operations that could sustain those costs. And so we're basically asking the franchises to take that on. instead of the league.
A lot of teams have done that. Like, the, to be to like fair, like you look at what the one of the reasons the Stars have succeeded.
Oh,
is they've done a great job building rinks. They've done a great job managing rinks. As much as, and there are lots of things you should rip the Arizona Coyotes for, but growing youth hockey is one of the things they've actually done well. Like it's like there's lots of other things where you can rip Arizona all you want, but they've done a lot of good things growing youth hockey and growing the sport there. It's almost to a level where it's actually interesting. Like some of the Sun Belt teams, some of the teams where they came in and they realized that we have a quote unquote newer sport to the space and we have to. They've done a better job long term of making it accessible to fans than some of the original six teams, where it gets very like there becomes it can be a very like uptight attitude of, well, we're an original, like how much the NHL loves the original six, like
absolutely,
the NHL loves the original six, and they'll be like, oh, it's a big original six matchup and everything like that, and it's like, I mean. To give you an idea of how far that is, how far of a disconnect that is from the current player and current, like, I mean, and it's something where, like, I wrote about it today, where Jason Robertson never watched Mike Modano play. Like, and Jason Robertson was born, like, so the Stars won the Stanley Cup, and we're all going to feel old right now. The Stars won the Stanley Cup, and Jason Robertson was born, like, 35 days later. Like, he,
oh
like,
my God.
Like, it's, like, Jason Robertson was born in 99. If you, for, Jason and so Jason's brother Nick plays for Toronto, like
right.
Like all original, like Nick doesn't give a shit about the original six. He grew up going to LA Kings games, so it's like it's something where the league loves this like hardcore, but like the people who were around or cared about this original six era, like
they're all dead.
And you're still catering to that market more than anything, when
you can't even use like the okay boomer thing because that's not even applicable anymore. Like those people,
like I do hope from an NHL perspective, I do hope that somebody looks at Seattle and Vegas as a wake up call, because Seattle and Vegas, I've heard the reports where it's like Seattle's already a top five revenue team in the league this year.
Yep.
Just between ticket sales, between merch and all of that stuff. And I do hope if the 32nd NHL team can come in and be cool and disruptive and can be something where people actually take the time to invest and everything like that. I hope that can be a little bit of a, I hope the NHL, now how the NHL will look at it is they'll pat themselves on the back and say we did a great job with Seattle, when really
let's make it a 64 team league because they'll all be successful.
Exactly what it really should be is like, let's look at what Seattle did and how can we apply it to other places, and it's that's the issue, and it comes down to this league is it's run by
old white men, and it needs to be run by a more in touch group of individuals regardless of what their background is, as long as they can improve it and make it more accessible for people like you and me and the younger crowd looking on.
And the other thing too is it's a little bit has changed, but in general, why is like, for example, who's it good? Like who am I trying to think of right now? But why is being a former player the requirement to work? Like it becomes all of these guys, and like it's great. We should have former players involved, but like, Mike Modano knows nothing about business. Like Mike Modano is helping the Minnesota Wild in a business sense. Mike Modano knows nothing about business. What he didn't go to college. He did, like, I'm not trying to rip on Mike here, but like the fact of the matter is Mike Modano went to the WHL when he was 18 years old, never finished school beyond high school. What qualifications does he have to be advising the Minnesota Wild's business operations?
Right.
Other than like it's things like that where just so many times you see guys in roles like that where, and why do you have to have played the game to market the game? Why do you have to have played the game to manage this? And I actually think the Stars, it's funny because I think the Stars actually have done a decent job of finding some guys who fits some of the stuff. Like Marty Turco is running the community, right. helps run the Stars Foundation, everything like that. Part of Marty actually has some history and actually worked his way into that. But too many times those roles just get gifted to former players across the league, where it's like, oh, well, you played, so you clearly know. And
yeah,
they don't.
You want to be an accountant? You were a great goaltender. You were drafted right out of college, or not even college, high school. No, I completely agree. I will say we've got a couple more just rapid fire questions before we jump into that, though. I do want to say we appreciate you jumping on. We've been trying to get you on, and I think this is a perfect time, especially with the Dallas Stars, three games left in the regular season leading into the playoffs. So just appreciate your time. Appreciate you hanging out with us. For me personally, my first, actually only rapid fire question, and it has to be, within 5 to 10 words, where do the Dallas Stars finish in this playoffs and these playoffs coming up?
I think they're playing in the Western Conference final. I think the Stars are playing the Western Conference final.
That's fair.
Love that energy.
They win or lose.
I don't want to go further than that. But I do, I look at,
ask me like a month.
I think for, you look at coming out of the Central, I'm taking Jake Oettinger over any other goalie in the Central.
100%.
And that's where I look at the spot where, even if they don't win the division and they have to play Colorado in the second round, I'm taking Jake Oettinger. I think Oettinger is such an advantage in the Western Conference. Now, who comes out of the Pacific and where things go is a little bit more, that becomes a little bit harder to nuance. But I think the Stars are playing into the third round this year. I think I would bet on Jake Oettinger against any goalie, almost any goalie in the West right now when you look at it. It's now the East is obviously crazy deep, but
all right, we'll take it. And hopefully the Dallas Stars end up in the Stanley Cup Finals against the Boston Bruins and ironically beat Jim Montgomery and the most dominant team in the regular season. But that's for another time. Pat?
I have the most important question of the night. There you go. Whataburger or In-N-Out?
Ooh. Ooh. I've always been good at knowing my audience. So I will definitely go with Whataburger. So
it's, okay. All right.
I was another person who was, obviously since retired and he's missed in Stars coverage, but, Mark Stepneski, former Dallas Stars scribe once, I can't remember who it was, but one other media member went down that debate, and the most heated I ever saw Mark get was defending Whataburger. So if Mark can be once seeing Mark's passion about that, I knew that there's no other answer to that question.
So. That's fair. That's fair. We appreciate we appreciate that. Hollywood calls you and they say, Sean, you've had an illustrious career. You've written some amazing stories and you've had some fantastic appearances on podcasts and run podcasts yourself. We're going to make a biopic about your life. But we need your 2 cents. Who plays Sean Shapiro in the biopic about your life?
God. So I have no, I'm terrible with actors anyway. So this is not, I'm not even going to go down that route. I will pivot on this. I made my acting debut back in September. I actually did.
Okay. So this is the first time we've actually had an actor.
Yes. So I am, there's a movie, there's a hockey movie that will be coming out at some point in 2023. I believe it'll come out later this year. I don't know I'm not exactly on the production side of things, but movie based off beer league hockey filmed in Charleston, South Carolina. My good friend from college actually wrote and directed it. And I am the goalie in that movie. And so that movie will come out and, that movie comes out in 2023. So, I am not a good actor at all. Basically I was, chosen because I can play goalie and the biggest part of the movie was, the biggest part of the movie was to create realistic looking hockey scenes. And then the main character is played by a real actor they actually found who happened to play hockey as well. So that is how I'm going to skirt around the question of to name an actor, because I am terrible at actors.
I guess you're the first person that could say, yeah, I'll just play myself now.
Yeah. I'll just be me.
I have my own SAG card.
I have an accredited role.
I do have a credited role. I do have an IMDb page, so it's
all right.
So I think this is another. This is multiple firsts.
Yeah,
and you're in good company because Keanu Reeves also played a goaltender and plays hockey in real life. So you might be in very select company with that answer. Yes. So obviously we'll be getting Keanu Reeves on the next couple
in,
weeks.
Like, the top two or three for goaltenders. Yeah. So.
Sean, well, honestly, man, we, like I said, just appreciate the time. I'm really excited to get this episode out to everyone that listens because, you know, you are extremely knowledgeable from top to bottom, just not from the Stars, but in the NHL and the AHL as well. So can you let everyone that's listening know where they can find your work and kind of support you a little bit more as we continue on?
Yeah, for sure. It's funny. I work at a lot of places right now, but the simplest thing right now for me is like, promoting the book. I was really happy we snagged the URL for the title We Win Here. So you go to wewinhere.com. It'll take you right to the page where you can order the book right now. I'm really excited about that. And then if you're looking for from a place where I'm still doing a lot of Stars stuff, I have the Substack over at Chapshots right now, and it's just Sean Shapiro at Substack, and that's been a fun kind of passion project. I kind of call that a bit of my, my sandbox where I play around with some story ideas, write some things. Some things work, some things don't. It's been fun. So people should check that out too.
Awesome. Well, Sean Shapiro, thank you for your time. And on behalf of all us with WADA Hockey, we will definitely be having you back. And we'll talk again soon.
It's been fun, guys.
Once again, want to thank Sean Shapiro for hanging out with us. The in-depth answers, some of the most in-depth answers we've had on this podcast since Gavin Spittle, ironically, who is also on the Spits and Suds podcast. So go check that one out too, because together we can make Texas hockey and hockey all around the country bigger than it's supposed to be. We can do our part. With our powers combined, we are Captain Planet. So, boys, I'll take this one for Shannon. Make good choices, Patty.
Stay sassy.
You muted yourself, I think.
And stay moist.
And don't, for any reason, even if you forget words because you're getting old, forget your Kermit tattoos.
I'm so late. I'm sitting here digging around.